because I love you too much, baby. Why can't you see?
Hello, welcome once again to Don't Tell Me, I'll Tell You, the Stand Podcast, a weekly podcast on the CBS All Access television show, The Stand. I am one of your co-hosts, Philip, from the state of New Hampshire in the U.S. of A., and with me in the Commonwealth of Virginia.
Hey, this is Barrett.
Barrett, how's it going?
It's going well.
Excellent. Good to hear it. All right. So we are here to discuss this week's episode, which was episode 5. But we'll get into that in a moment. But before we do, where people can find us, people who have stumbled upon us and who we are and all that. Don't Tell Me, I'll Tell You, the Stand Podcast is one of the podcasts of the Dark Discussions Network. So www.darkdiscussions.com. It is a network of podcasts, but it also is a daily updated website for horror and genre news. So if you follow horror and genre news, darkdiscussions.com should be one of the sites you check daily. You can email us at darkdiscussions@aol.com or simply press the contact us button on darkdiscussions.com and we will read your email on the podcast. So if you have anything that's cordial, even if it's something that you disagree with us, we will read it. So if you have opinions on what they're doing to certain characters, how it differs from the book, if that episode or the season is held up and what you were expecting, you know, anything of that nature, please do send us an email. We do have a quick email or tweet, I should say, that references our podcast, and I will read that in a little bit. So we'll thank that individual. What else can folks do? They can follow us on Twitter at @DarkDiscussion1, and they can join the Facebook group, Dark Discussions Podcast Facebook group, where you can join in the discussion of all things genre. So there's a lot of interesting things going on there, discussing the best films of 2020, the Wonder Woman 1984 film, Star Trek Discovery New Season, The Stand, obviously, A Discovery of Witches. So there's all sorts of conversations going on there. You can join in or you can actually start your own conversation. So that's pretty much the house cleaning. So let's first read our email from one of our Twitter users, or listeners, I should say. This is what he has to say. And he's contacted us once before, at least one of our podcasts. Again, there's over 30 podcasts on the network, and myself and Barrett participate in a number of them, while other co-hosts or hosts have their own podcasts as well. So I'm sure there will be something for everybody on darkdiscussions.com, and you can find the podcasts wherever podcasts are found, never mind listening to them right on darkdiscussions.com. And this is from John Appleby. John Appleby actually wrote us about Stephen King prior, and I forget if it was related to this show, like our book episodes or not, but no worries. But he is comments often on Twitter and thanks us for our work. And this is what he has to say. John Appleby of the UK. He goes, "Hi all, hope you're well and COVID free. A big thanks for your as ever excellent podcasts. The Stand CBS miniseries hasn't stood up to the book or 1994 version yet, but I'm glad you folks will persevere. On a side note, I did watch Host, the short film on Shudder on Saturday, January 18th. And F me, what a film. Take care and stay safe. John Appleby of the UK."
Thanks, John.
Yep, appreciate that, John. Any feedback is always welcome, and I'm glad that you're enjoying our work. I appreciate it. It's always good to not only know that we have good numbers, but actually hear from people who are actually listening. So we have names or ideas of who it is that's listening. Speaking of being safe and COVID-free, unfortunately for me, just bringing it up, service announcement for everybody. On January 2nd, my father came down with COVID-19. He was healthy and fine only days prior. And 12 days later, he took for the worse and he passed away on January 14th. Had the funeral for him yesterday. So, definitely be safe and COVID-free. COVID is most certainly a dangerous disease, especially for senior citizens and those with underlying conditions. So if you fall into either category, most certainly be very, very careful. Today, the U.S. of A. announced its 400,000th death from COVID, which that number includes my father a couple of days ago. So be safe, everyone. Absolutely. So John's words are apt for sure. All right. And the reason I'm podcasting is life must go on, and podcasting at least will keep my mind off of the unfortunate real world issues that are happening specifically related to COVID. Speaking of our podcast here, and we mentioned this on our Discovery of Witches podcast when we recorded that a couple of days ago, me and Barrett do a Discovery of Witches, Demons, and Vampires podcast, a weekly episode that discusses the television series A Discovery of Witches Season 2. And basically what happened was the website was redesigned for Dark Discussions in August to be a much more news-oriented site. And in December 19th, the audio files were moved to a secondary area to make sure the website would be nice and fast and wouldn't crash. And the new website area that the audio files are actually keeps track on numbers for the podcast. And so far, this podcast is actually doing quite well. So since December 19th, Don't Tell Me, I'll Tell You has a number of episodes in the top 10, three of them actually, Blank Page, The End, and Pocket Savior. So that's pretty good. So there's a lot of folks out there that are listening to our podcast. So that's a good thing.
Yeah.
I think you're bringing them in, Barrett. I think you're bringing them in.
I think it's you. I'm just there along to help.
Yeah, the comments I have about this show, I would think would scare people away, but we'll discuss that later, because folks who have already been listening to some of these episodes, specifically the ones that are on this season, not the book episode ones that we recorded as prefixes or preambles to the series. My thoughts aren't going to be much different. Actually, they may be even worse tonight.
It's going to be a worse night. Just be prepared. But, you know, this is fun to listen to, at least, and to talk about.
Yes, absolutely. All right, so some information about the episode that we're going to discuss. This is an interesting thing. They actually changed the name of the episode and the week before it was actually released. This necessarily isn't bizarre, because Game of Thrones did that a couple of times as well. Like the Bells episode was called something else, and then the week it was released, they named it the Bells or something like that. So other shows have done this.
I'll tell you one thing. The change of the title is indicative of how they messed this episode up.
Yes. Originally, the name of the episode was called Suspicious Minds, directly named after, obviously, Elvis Presley's major hit and awesome song, Suspicious Minds, from the 70s.
Which is an episode, I might say.
Yes, it is. It was used actually pretty good, actually.
Yeah, I thought, perfect.
Yeah. The one good thing about this show is they're using the music quite good.
That's the only thing that's quite good.
That's about it, yeah. They rechanged the name to Fear and Loathing in Las Vegas. And I wasn't sure why. I would say it's more appropriate in title because loathing and fear is how I feel about this episode. And Las Vegas honestly has nothing to do with it. So it's just they decided to play up what the stereotype of the city is when it has nothing to do with what's in the book. But we will get into all that. So let's discuss our thoughts on the episode. So, Barrett, what's your feelings about this episode?
Oh, God. The best thing I can say about it is that it's linear. At worst, this episode is a travesty. It totally changes characters again for no apparent reason that I can tell. That makes sense if you're trying to do an adaptation of a book that is amazing. I'd love to love this show, but I just can't. The things they do in this are terrible. They've, in my opinion, in the first five episodes, they have even changed the whole message of the story. So it's just, I don't know. I'm not happy with it. That's all I can say.
Okay, very good. I feel you're a little kind because you said the worst you could say about this episode is it's a travesty. I would say that would be the best scenario is to call it a travesty. The worst is a punch in the face because this episode was terrible. It was friggin' the worst episode I saw. I cannot say how much this episode was arguably partly one of the worst episodes of television I've ever seen. And I will say that a lot of it is because I've read the book. And so what I've seen in this episode completely changes an entire section of the book. So if someone hasn't read the book and they watch this episode, maybe they wouldn't be as offended. But I've read the book and I'm completely offended. The whole thing is a slap in the face to anybody that's part of the core audience. I know myself and Barrett have listened to many podcasts and actually participated in various podcasts that would discuss things like the Marvel Universe or the DC Universe or the Star Wars Universe or the Star Trek Universe or any other universe, Lords of the Rings, Game of Thrones, you know, you name it. We have a lot of people who get really upset when certain things come out in those universes that don't work with what they're used to. Oh, Doctor Who's another one, for example. And the problem is that when things like that happen, it's because the writers, producers, the directors, the artists, if you prefer, don't understand the fan base. Because if they're taking a world that has been created by someone and developed by someone, whether it's George Lucas, Stephen King, or anyone else, they're expecting those who pick up the mantle to at least understand that universe and the fan base that loves that universe. These showrunners here, I don't think did either. They slapped everybody in the face because I don't think they care.
Yeah.
And they just took a great concept and have tried to make it, I guess, their own, which has been terrible. And in a sense, makes me question why even make such a product if you're not going to follow the, I guess, the, if not the book itself, at least the spirit.
Right. That's where I have a problem. Like, I understand the practical necessity of some things needing to change. You have a limited amount of time to tell a 1,000-page book, over 1,000 pages. I understand that. But when you change the core story and core motivations of characters, that's not for practical reason other than you think you know better than the author did. And that I don't like.
Right, yeah. I mean, and it's bizarre, too, because, okay, these people, whether they read the book or were given an executive summary by somebody or whatever, they got to understand the book is popular for many reasons. And the first one is the fall of society.
Yep.
And that's gone. But there's so many other things as well. And to take Las Vegas and change the entire concept of what Las Vegas is in the book, never mind those who run Las Vegas, is absolutely, I'm trying to think of a kind word, but
let's put it this way. They don't even need to worry about Las Vegas according to this show, because they're all messed up. There's
right.
It's all chaos. There's nothing happening there.
Right.
I'm surprised they have electricity running.
Right. That's a fair point. Yeah. And the thing is that as we folks who've read the book know, or even seen the miniseries from 1994 or 6 or whenever it was, Randall Flagg runs Las Vegas. And I said this offline to you. I won't use the nations that I mentioned, but he runs it like a dictatorship and or just an authoritarian communist or fascist way. In other words, he arrests and executes people when they break the laws he puts in place, and those laws are in many ways primitive, because, you know, why would you execute someone because they use illegal drugs? I mean, you don't do that unless you're in a terrible nation. But generally, the people have jobs, they have fun, they do things, they have pickup baseball games, they have children that play and all this other stuff. So it's suppressed, but it's not chaotic.
And they're militaristic, because they're going to get military vehicles and weapons. They're at like bases trying to get all that equipment restored and working and all that. So it's a militaristic dictatorship in the book.
Yeah, right, exactly. I would concur with that. And here, it's not. It's a hedonistic party.
Yeah.
So all the things that in the book that Flag would arrest people for and try them and execute them for, which included
crucify them,
which included drugs, hedonism, thievery, public drunkenness, you know, all that stuff.
Yeah, you could drink but not be drunk in public or derelict in your duties and things like that.
Exactly. Well, in the show, he approves of all that.
Yeah, and they have an arena where people are fighting.
Which isn't in the book.
No, because that would be a waste of manpower.
Right.
You don't have people to waste to do that.
Right. Yeah, so this is almost, you know what? Yeah, I guess this is more like the end of the Roman Empire or the Greek Empire, is where they just went into a hedonistic spiral of chaos, and used humanity as toys, and that's what they're showing here. When the Vegas in the book, New Vegas in the book, is more a Eastern European communist state, or maybe a Middle Eastern monarchy, or something of that nature. And here they've turned it into the debauchery of Rome.
Yeah, and like in Hunter S. Thompson, you know, Fear and Loathing, that's where the title's coming from. Everybody's messed up. They're doing cocaine off plates. They're doing every drug they can and having sex constantly and killing each other. I mean, that society would not exist in this aftermath.
Right. And one semi-important character in the book is caught using drugs, harder drugs, and he's arrested and crucified.
Yeah.
Here, they're openly doing the drugs in public. They're openly having gangbangs in public. They're openly having arena murders in public. Any of that happening in the book, those people would all be arrested and executed by flag.
Exactly. Well, let's get into the differences.
Yeah, let's do that. Okay. So one thing that may confuse people who aren't familiar with the source material is, who the hell is Dana Jurgens? Because generally she just appears for like 1 minute in a prior episode and then is the main character basically for 80% of this episode. At least when I say main character, I should say the main protagonist. Now, to be fair, the book and the prior miniseries, Dana Jurgens' character is never really developed that well anyway. And if you only have, as you said, Barrett, a certain amount of time to do this story, it is understood that Dana's character may be shortchanged in any television adaption or movie adaption.
They don't shortchange her here because she gets a whole episode. So she actually gets more time in this series than she gets in the book.
I was about to say that. You're right.
I'm sorry.
So if there's an issue with the book, there's a few, and we discussed a few of them. Dana, I would think, is one of them because her character, a very much of a cardboard cutout of a person in the book, because, again, as you just mentioned, she's not really a main character, but she's always there.
Yep.
But that stated, she plays an important role in the book for the one chapter that she's in that is basically this story.
Yep.
So let's go here. We got CinemaBlend up again, CinemaBlend.com. Eric Eisenberg has been writing an article weekly about the differences between the source material and the miniseries. And he's been pretty unbiased. He points out the issues, but he doesn't really give an opinion. He lets us or you decide your own opinion, but he just wants to place them out. And we actually last week mentioned like three or four others that he forgot in his article. So this one here is called a different title. This one says How Dana Jurgens' Las Vegas Mission from the Stand Differs in Stephen King's Book. It's the same article, but he just retitled it. Instead of saying differences in the episode, he's specifically talking about Dana. So, let's see. Mother Abigail is pissed about the spies being sent. So, that in the book, I don't even think she knows about the spies.
No, she doesn't. She leaves before they even decide to do it. In the book.
Yeah, I think you're right. And that's referenced later in this episode when she leaves. Also, I felt it was a little funny that she could read sign language too.
Yeah.
I don't understand why they made this change where everybody can just suddenly read sign language when in the book, Nick, being the individual he is, understands that most people don't know sign language unless you work with the deaf community often. And that's not because people are lazy or whatever. It's just...
It's another language. It's hard
It's another language, in a sense, right. And so what Nick does in the book, since he's interacting not with fellow deaf folk, he's interacting with the general population of people, both pre and post apocalypse, he always writes things down. And I'm not sure why they made that change and suddenly have all these people suddenly know. I mean, when Mother Abigail could read sign language, I just rolled my eyes.
Yeah, me too. And, I mean, I just don't like this scene at all. It didn't need to be there. Mother Abigail was not getting involved in the council's decisions directly in the book. And in here, she's basically leading it.
Right. Yeah. 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 It's weird. She's way too much into the politics, and she's also very much more relaxed up until the point she has her breakdown and leaves in the book.
Yep.
So she just says, "Oh, I trust you folks. You know, you do well, and you know, just make everybody, you know, and I'll see people as they come in and whatnot, give them their blessing and so forth." But here she like is very much of dominant a person, not because of being a person that can see things, but dominant as in personality wise. And that wasn't the case in the book.
Right. And in the book, she's kind of like the Moses character. She can talk to God. She's not going to get to the promised land. And she's like their spiritual side of things that kind of directs them indirectly. But she does not take that big a role aside from kind of, you get this feeling that she gives, you know, credence to the council by talking to each of them. You know what I mean? But in this, she's like the council leader. You might as well call her the leader.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. She's almost like Queen Elizabeth.
Yeah.
And then you have the prime minister and his cabinet that are the rulers, which would be Nick and the rest. But here, she's more than just a figurehead. So, yeah.
It was a good scene. Totally worthless.
Yeah. Now, Dana, this is the next one that they say here. Dana doesn't have to sleep with Lloyd. So, yeah, what it says is in the book, Dana Jurgens had to go through absolute hell, but through it all is a perfect trooper and does everything in her power for the side of good. She is, however, saved one serious indignity in the miniseries compared to the book. She does not have to actually sleep with Lloyd.
Because, well, it's more significant in the book because she's gay.
That's so true, too.
Sleeping is definitely even more difficult for that reason.
Right, right. And in the book, she's actually playing a honey trap, right?
Yep.
You know, while here, they have this weird scene where she's with Lloyd and Julie Laurie and was about to have a three-way, but Lloyd can't get it up, basically.
Julie Laurie brings up the dark man.
And yeah,
she did
right.
Purposely too.
Right, right. And so that we'll discuss that scene in a little bit. But yeah, Julie is, that's a change anyway.
And this is more than a petulant child. In the book, she's kind of a petulant child that wants to get back at everybody. In this, she's more Machiavellian.
Right, right. Yeah. I mean, Julie in the book has really only two scenes. The scene when she first meets Nick and Tom, and then she has a couple of small scenes in Vegas, and then she finally has one bigger scene where she goes and talks to Lloyd about how she saw someone in the city, meaning Tom Cullen, you know, he's a spy, and she lets Lloyd know because he was heading to Boulder, or at least not Boulder at that time, but Mother Abigail, and she knows that Nick, they know that Nick is one of Abigail's, you know, leaders, I guess, so to speak. And so she felt that was important information for Lloyd, who's the de facto leader when Randall Flagg isn't around, to know that information. And that's That's her whole role in the book.
I can see why they increased her role, because there were no real female characters of note over there aside from what she does. You notice to Tom Cullen. I can understand that to a degree, but they changed the story completely by doing that.
They made Julie a concubine for Lloyd.
Pimp Lloyd, as I call him now.
Yeah, which makes no sense, because even in the book, she's not sleeping with anybody, for that matter. And they do have other female character, the stripper who you know does works on electric wire or something like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And she's like one of Lloyd's good friends, but she doesn't sleep with him either. And so, yeah. And another thing too is that
finding women. That's why he gravitates to Dana Jurgens.
Yeah, because she obviously shows interest intentionally, because she's doing the honey trap. Also in the book, they're in Vegas much longer than just a day or two or a few days, yeah. Right? I mean, she hooks up with Lloyd, and she's already sleeping with him for a good couple of weeks, I think.
At least, yeah.
Yeah, so they streamline that. But also, they didn't make her a girlfriend anymore. They made her a potential girlfriend, meaning she was going to be one of the ladies that he'd be sleeping with, because again, this Vegas is a hedonistic world, not the world that we see in the book.
Yeah.
All right, let's see. Larry isn't in another relationship when Nadine begs him to take her virginity. Now, this one I know pissed you off, and this one pissed me off as well.
Yeah, because, you know, in here, they say it makes Larry's rejection of Nadine's advances all about personal growth instead of both that and a committed relationship. The problem with that is him having the committed relationship was part of his personal growth.
Yes.
So that he didn't want to be with her anymore.
Right. He had chosen. He said if he wasn't with Lucy Swan, he would probably be with you, Nadine, but I'm already with someone else now. That time has passed.
And he loves the new woman, so he doesn't want to be with Nadine anymore. So to me, this takes away some of that power of his relationship and makes his character – it's harder to believe even. It's hard for me to believe that he's going to go, oh, no, I'm not going to sleep with you. I don't have anybody else, but, you know, and I've been wanting you for, you know, 6 months or more. But now you're suddenly on me, and I'm going to say no because I'm just too good a guy.
Yeah, this whole thing is stupid, and I'll tell you why, besides of what you said. And like you said, in the book, he's already with another woman, so has loyalty with the other woman. Whether or not he still desires Nadine or even would prefer to go with Nadine, he already has something that's good here. He's grown as a person and has responsibilities. And the TV show, he's always liked Nadine, has wanted to be with her sexually since the beginning, and he's still single now, and now Nadine has come to him and says, I want to be with you, and he turns her down because of some, like you said, some lame thing like, but will we regret it tomorrow? What about Joe? You know, and all this other stuff. And it's just like, none of that makes any sense at all. It's just stupid. It's horrible.
It's just impossible to believe with knowing his feelings for her. I can understand a man trying to be gentlemanly and saying, maybe we should think about this. But in this particular situation, it's hard to believe. It passes my credibility meter.
Yeah, exactly. Because again, he's been wanting to be with her forever, and she now is willing, and they're both single and lonely. Why not, right? And especially since they both basically generally love each other. You know, it's not just a phony. It's not even a one night stand, right? So this gentleman saying I don't know what he's talking about.
And they could have a family with Joe. That would have been the answer to that question. We can be a family.
Right. Because in the book, he is family to Joe, right? Because Lucy becomes the second mother, because they call the two mothers, right? Yep. Because Larry's now with Lucy, and Joe considers Larry his stepfather, just as he considers Nadine his stepmother. So he goes back and forth between the two families in the book. So now, since there is no Lucy, it's perfect.
Right.
You know, and they ruin it. Well, that's the one thing too. Well, not one thing, but one of many things. They've destroyed Larry's character completely in this TV show.
Yeah. Every character they've destroyed completely.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just a terrible show. It's disgusting. Okay. Dana gets a note to Tom. Now, in the book, what happens is she's working on electric wires. Yeah, that's it. She's working on electric wires with the stripper, the ex-stripper, who she's kind of buddies with. And while they're on electric wires, putting the electricity up for the streets and whatnot, she sees Tom, as a construction worker, I think, walking with a bunch of people down the road in Vegas. And so at that point, she has just discovered that Tom is a spy, because before she left, it wasn't really explained well in the TV series, but in the book, they say there's going to be other spies, but they don't tell each person who the other spies are, because if you get caught, they don't want you to be tortured and give the names of the other three spies. All spies in the book head to Vegas separately without knowing who the other three spies are. So when she sees Tom, she now knows that Tom is one of the spies. Here, oh, and she doesn't say anything. She never talks to Tom. She never communicates to Tom. She doesn't even want to be near Tom, because she doesn't want to give away his, his, you know, him being a spy. And the thing is, too, is in the book, Tom and she know each other. But in this TV series, when Tom sees Dana, he doesn't even know who she is.
Yeah, exactly.
When she gives him the note.
Yeah.
So that's a change. So this is what Cinnabon Blend says. Thanks to the Boulder Zone Committee underestimating the abilities of Randall Flagg, the plan to send spies into Las Vegas really doesn't go all that well. And that's a shared element between both the book and the series. What doesn't quite go down the same in the two versions of the story is the interaction between two of the three infiltrators. Dana does see Tom Cullen in the original text, but it's not really. But it's really not until she is very close to dying that she actually puts together why she recognizes him. And that's the key. I think she understands. Yeah, because she's seen the face, and then she figures it out, and then she understands why Flagg doesn't know who the third spy is. And we'll discuss that when we get into the episode. All right. Randall Flagg performs a different kind of magic. All right. What does that mean? Let's read it. Here we have another bit of detail swapping, with the main structure remains the same.
No banana.
What is that?
No banana.
Oh, yeah. All right. All right.
Her knife turns into a banana and she can't do anything with that.
Yeah, you're right. You're right. So here it is. But they don't really go down the same way, the assassination attempt. For starters, there is a weapon of choice. In the adaption, she slips a pair of scissors into a meeting with Flagg, but in the novel, she wields a knife loaded in a spring-loaded mechanism on her wrist. So basically like a Travis Bickle from Taxi Driver. Then there is the actual execution. For a moment in the new version, it seems Dana has possibly taken out the evil force by stabbing the dark man in the neck, but it turns out to be an act. Stephen King takes it a touch weirder. Flagg transforms her knife into a banana, as you mentioned. Also, here they make Flag a bisexual.
Yes.
Because, yeah, so we'll discuss all that, I'm sure, too. So basically, if he could able to figure out who the spies are, he knows that Dana, and he's not stupid to let Dana that close unless he has power to prevent her from killing him.
Right.
Here, he kind of allows himself to be stabbed. So obviously it was a dramatic moment for TV. That's why they did it, I'm assuming. Now, Dana opts for a different method of suicide. All right. So, let's see. The death of Dana Jurgens is certainly one of the grisliest. And while her suicide in this new adaptation is definitely horrible, as she uses a broken bottle to stab her own throat, the book is sincerely worse. The character comes to the same understanding in the book version that she has to die before information about Tom Cullen is tortured out of her. But her move is to try and smash through one of the hotel suite's windows. It doesn't go quite as planned, you know, so jump to her death. And instead she basically gets impaled by the glass from the window. Because she's hanging half out the window in the book.
Yeah, and then after she cuts her throat and he knows she's dead, he throws her out the window.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, so Flag begins to drag her back in, but she kills herself by violently twisting her neck and driving an embedded shard deeper into her neck. And then, then he tosses her out. And then when Lloyd talks to her, he finds out, But again, Lloyd... Lloyd had already known she was a spy at that point, had no problems sending her up because he felt betrayed too.
Right.
And Lloyd isn't a gigolo or a pimp.
Right.
And we'll get into all that horribleness as well. Now we have another one here. Harold has full-blown security systems.
It's unbelievable.
I mean, in the book, he has no idea who breaks into his house, and he has to piece it together. And he figures it out because someone breaks into his basement through the basement window, and he sees the glass on the ground, and that's how he knows, not because of a chess piece. And he also doesn't have a camera that shows that it's Larry. It was actually Franny that is the one that breaks through the window in the cellar. Yeah.
And she finds his diary.
Right.
There's no diary found in this either, as far as we can tell so far, which is what how crazy he is.
Right, yeah. Basically, what happens is they think that Harold is acting a little odd, but they're not sure. And then what happens is Larry, who's still buddies with Harold at this point, goes over for a glass of wine or something, and he finds a loose stone in Harold's fireplace, picks it up, and he sees there's a book in there, and it's a diary. But he doesn't really open it, but he mentions it to the committee or to Franny and Stu or something when they were talking about Harold acting strange. And that's when Franny decides to break into the house herself.
Yep.
And she's the one that finds the diary. Yep. And the diary basically says, what's that?
But unfortunately it's too late at that point.
Yeah, right. Here they have not only Larry being seen on video camera by Harold, but also Harold plants video cameras in Franny and Stu's house to watch them have sex or something. It's just what?
I think he's masturbating too while he's watching it.
That's so stupid. Terrible. Garbage. This show sucks. It's terrible. This is the worst episode by far.
It is by far the worst episode.
And, of course, there's one big change he didn't mention at all in this article, which I think is the most egregious. And that is changing Vegas from a totalitarian nation to a hedonistic Rome nation.
Yeah.
That is completely different than how Randall Flagg runs Vegas in the book.
Yeah, it totally changes that whole society.
And he didn't mention also in this article Lloyd's change. Lloyd is a professional. He's almost like a if he's not a director or VP type of individual, he's at worst a leader of a mob, you know, whatever unit, whatever they call the mafia units that, you know, in other words, he's, you know what he reminds me of? He was similar to one of the minor mob bosses that followed orders, kept everything in place. You know what I'm saying? Played smart and was and showed respect to his boss.
Yep.
At the worst.
People feared him because he was second in command after the man, the dark man.
Yes. Yeah. And he was well respected. He was smart now. He wasn't, he had confidence, unlike in this show where he goes, "People like me now?" And all that other crap. And
he talks with a fake Southern accent.
Yeah, and people were scared of him. They scared of him in the sense that they knew he wasn't going to do anything to them as long as they did what they had to do. But they respected him. They, you know, they feared him, but feared him in a good way, the way you would fear your boss if you did something stupid.
Yeah, and you know? Was two people with a stone.
Repeat that. Oh yeah, right. Yeah, he was one of the. Yeah, exactly.
Yep. That was extremely important in the book.
That's right. And this is episode 5, right? And we still don't have Trash Can Man.
I know, the other person with a stone. Yeah.
Right. The pivotal person for everything.
Yep.
So, yeah. I mean, I think those changes are huge changes that this guy. Eric Eisenberg should have put in his article too, which is changing Vegas to a hedonistic place rather than a totalitarian place, and making Lloyd a pimp instead of a professional.
Yeah. He's just a joke.
Yeah.
You can't even take him seriously. I mean, he's like a caricature.
Right. He couldn't even get it up for two women.
Right.
I mean, that are hot. I mean, we're talking really good looking women, you know. It's, you know, I mean, I know these things happen to people, fine, but it didn't happen in the book.
No, it definitely didn't happen in the book.
No, he had no problems in the book. All right, so I guess now with all that stated, we can start discussing the whole episode and specific scenes and whatnot. Again, if you're listening to this, you've probably already watched the show or read the book anyway, and you just want to hear other people's thoughts on the show and its comparison to the book and whatever. So we're not worried about doing spoilers. All right. So where do we want to go? Stop, Barrett. What do you want to do?
That is a good question. I guess we can start with Vegas.
I was going to say we start with the garbage can and just toss it all. But on a serious note,
with Dana in Vegas. Well, we don't actually start with that, but let's start with that. Dana in Vegas. So Dana is in Vegas and she's trying to get close to Flagg, and she's being as obvious as you can be about it in a television show. In which case she'd be dead before she even got close. And so she tries to make friends. Well, actually, Julie comes to her, right? She's working in the basement and Julie comes to her.
Yeah, yeah. Actually, she's working in a scene that's not in the book. She's working.
Yeah.
Instead of being an electrician or electrical wire person, you know, putting up the electrical wires, she actually works at the Hoover Dam.
Right. Yeah, that's right. It's the Hoover Dam. They didn't. That's not even brought up in the book, really, right?
No, it's not brought up in the book
at
all.
But they're working. It kind of makes sense because they're getting electricity back. Whatever. So she's working at the Hoover Dam, and Julie comes and gets her and brings her back to Vegas.
Well, it's more than that, right? It's Julie shows up with Lloyd, actually, and Lloyd's off at just checking out his other minions while she goes to get Dana, because she says, yeah, everybody's telling me that you're asking around, how can you meet for Flag? I want to meet Flag, so we're coming here to get you. And then after that, suddenly Lloyd appears, and basically says the exact same thing. I hear you want to meet Flag. And they said, yeah, so they basically said, you know, you can be anything you want and whatnot, and it cuts from there, but you get a general sense that, okay, they're setting it up where she is now going to be hanging out with Lloyd and Julie.
Yeah, because he starts looking at her as another woman he can conquer.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, and I guess that's about to happen. Well, that's the thing. It happens so quick, right? There's the one scene, and then they go to the quote-unquote shopping scene, and then they go to Flag, and then she's dead. You know, so it happens literally like...
And everything in there... Yeah, everything else in there is just spectacle to make you see how hedonistic the place is.
Right. Right, right.
Which is probably about 30 minutes of running time of the pits where people are fighting, where Tom Cullen has been put in to drag bodies out. And there's, you know, people cheering it on, and there's people having sex all over the place and drinking and drugs. And you can list everything. What I find ironic is, it's okay for them to be snorting coke in there, but you never see a cigarette in the show.
Yeah, right. right.
So don't cigarettes are not good, but hey, this cocaine's okay.
Right. Well, that's how Hollywood is now, right? cigarettes, smoking, and tobacco is now considered not part of the politically correct thing to do, but... You know, mass murders and drugs and hedonistic sex is okay.
Yeah.
And all right, whatever. But it's completely irrational. I mean, okay, all right, they're worried that someone will start smoking cigarettes and get cancer. But
of course, they have a great
drugs, murder, and hedonistic sex where you could get AIDS or whatever. You know, so I mean, it's just so stupid.
But they do have Greg Kinnear vaping, which is.
Yeah, you know, that's true. But that's drugs. That's your drugs. That was pot. It's different. It's not cigarettes.
Oh, was it pot? They never really say that, do they?
Yeah. Well, it's pretty obvious if you're vaping. You.
I think that's what he has to smoke so he can get into his role.
That's right. You're right.
He's like, this is a requirement on my contract. I have to be able to smoke dope out of this vape machine.
Right, so this is what I wrote for the Stand podcast. I wrote a bunch of stuff down just because I didn't want to forget them about this nonsense. Okay, so Lloyd is a pimp or a gigolo. Okay, he's not a professional anymore. Julie is his right-hand man or person, if you prefer. Okay, and she was not at all in the book. She was just a citizen of Vegas.
Citizen, because she was using information about Tom to try and get higher up.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah, good point. Yeah.
Yeah.
The Heaven Scream is ridiculous and completely eccentric when Lloyd walks out of the elevator and he goes, "This is heaven!" And he just screams, and it's literally, I'm counting. He goes for at least 10 seconds. 1, 2, 3. I'm going, oh my God, they're actually doing this? This is making this guy look like a joke. All right, so that was stupid. The gladiator stuff.
Oh, my God.
absolutely stupid. If people chant, I mean, this is literally like the movie Gladiator, where people are watching people get killed and then they throw in the lines they eat you after. I mean, it was
I
just
want to say something about that too. The fact that they're killing people off so directly and so obviously and not lawfully is totally against how he runs the society in the book, because in the book he wants people to come there, not to go away, and this would drive people away. So he gets the lights on right away. He gets everything running and running good.
Right. And the thing is the people that are attracted to Vegas aren't hedonists.
Right.
They could be petty criminals. It could be sociopaths. It could be, and a lot of them are just normal people that just have you know, fell, you know, flipped the coin, and they just landed on the dark side for some reason, you know, and because a lot of the people in Vegas aren't hedonists or evil. They're just like, you know, they're I don't know how to, it's, we explained it a little bit in the book episodes. It's kind of hard to explain though. It's like, they're not necessarily murderers, I mean, or criminals or anything, but they're definitely, you know, but they could have like a trait in them, you know. So, you know what it is? This is how I've always tried to look at things. It's like, if you were born in a different time or a different country or a different place, you could fall on the wrong side. But how do you know? Because you know, if we're looking at good and evil, since this is what this is, you know, hell and heaven, and you do all these good things and you go to heaven, a lot of that could be circumstantial because you just happen to be born into a good family versus, say, being born into a bad family where you're beaten and you become evil. So what this kind of is that there's, it's almost like the old Protestant predestination, where people, no matter what their circumstances are, whether they grew up normally or if they were bad in their prior life, it's almost their soul determines where they go, not their actions.
Yep.
You know what I'm saying? In other words, if you land up in Vegas, it's not necessarily because you did evil things in the real world prior. It's your soul is tainted to be, you know, have evil thoughts or evil anger, or, you know, your seven deadly sins. You don't necessarily have done any of them in the real world prior to the apocalypse, but it was in your soul, those thoughts. And so,
not only that, there's probably some people that made it there that weren't tainted.
Yeah, like the kids, the children.
Yeah, or just somebody who randomly was like west of there and came east and made it to Vegas, and they had food, they had electricity.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That's probably the majority of people there. There's, you know, just like in Colorado, they have people that are bad that eventually leave because it doesn't fit them.
Right, that's a good point. You're absolutely right. Yeah, yeah, and I know, like Dana's friend, the stripper, I forget her name, she worked on electric, you know, wires, and maybe, you know, we don't really learn too much about her prior life except that she's was good looking and that she was a stripper, but she's become a mother to an orphan, similar to, you know, how Joe was an orphan and you know, find someone to take care of him, you know. So yeah, and you know, that kid, he had no evil in him, right? I mean, he's just a kid, you know. So yeah, so anyway, the whole thing is that people wouldn't go to Vegas necessarily for the hedonism, especially the people that would make a society work. Right? He wants the engineers, he wants the scientists, he wants the military people, he wants the executives, he wants intelligent people, he wants worker bees who will follow orders. He doesn't want the hedonist people. Those are the people he's executing.
Right, exactly. He wants the people that make a society run, and he rewards the people that make a society run.
Exactly.
They get more stuff. They have better places to live. They get the women, or the women get the men, all that.
Right. And it has nothing to do with hedonism.
Nope.
The hedonists are arrested and executed in the book.
Hedonism, I would say, would be considered part of the previous society.
Right, exactly. Yes. Yep, absolutely. And that's, he doesn't want that.
No. They don't want Serato either. They don't want it anywhere. It's part of the previous society. They're making something new.
Right. Yeah, yeah, exactly right. Both the Boulder and Vegas don't want that crap. You're absolutely right. Then we have cocaine. We actually see Julie snorting cocaine in Lloyd's room, where Lloyd has it out in the open. And if that was the case, Lloyd and Julie would have been executed in the book.
They'd have been crucified.
There is no cocaine in the book except for people who get executed.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think there's one point where they're killing somebody because he just gets drunk too much.
That's correct. Yeah, yeah. And he's one of Lloyd's friends.
Right. And Lloyd has to do it anyway. And everybody steps away from him at that point. He's like, please help me. Please help me. And nope, yep. You got no love from us.
Yeah, 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 yeah. I mean, you know, they feel sorry about it, but they're not going to stick up for him because he fucked up, and then they're going to be next, you know, because, you know, he screwed up. If we speak up, we're going to get executed. You know, that's what happens in a totalitarian state. If you try to defend someone from the state, then they take you next.
Right.
Yeah. All right. And Flag is LGBTQ. So when he gets stabbed by Dana, and then he you know, pretends he's dead, and then he starts talking when he's all bloody. He goes, "Yeah, yeah, my ex lover, and it was some Russian guy, and it was a man, told me how to fake to play dead." And I had to rewind that. I go, "Hold on, did he just say a lover?" And sure enough, yeah. So Flag is LGBTQ. He is not so in the book. So that's brand new. This one really bothered me. I was almost laughing. Okay, so when Dana and Lloyd are about to have a three-way.
That was at least a fun scene.
Oh, my God. The two women, oh, my God, they were like tens. I mean, absolutely gorgeous. So it was a lot of eye candy. I'll give it that. A lot of eye candy. The thing that was interesting about that scene is you could hear the gladiator fights and the music from the lobby. In Vegas, especially, never mind, pretty much anywhere, hotel rooms, especially in Vegas, are soundproof.
Yeah.
You can't hear anything in Vegas hotel rooms, and that's intentional because of all the noise from the casinos.
Right.
Here, Lloyd is on like the 18th floor or whatever, and he can hear the gladiator and the screaming and all that woohoo crap going in the orgy downstairs.
Yeah.
So that was stupid. Julie notices Tom right away. It's Julie that notices Tom right away. And lets Dana know, hey, I know that guy. And so Dana learns about Tom
from Julie.
Through Julie, rather than seeing him himself. Because in the book, Julie and Dana don't have any interaction at all.
Right.
Tom is not working the power lines or construction. He's carrying dead bodies off the gladiator thing. Now, the gladiator thing, as we discussed, isn't even in the book.
It's stupid.
There's orgies everywhere during all the scenes, and that includes both heterosexual and homosexual. And you can actually, if you really look, you can see it all going on in the background. So anybody that doesn't want their child, this is definitely R-rated episode, if not NC-17 episode for sure. Lloyd is a loser. He has no self-esteem. He hasn't become intelligent. And he's not really a leader. He's just a bozo. No showing of the glowing stones. So we saw him get the stone, But so that was a minor one I noticed, because he talks about it a bit with people, including Dana, but in the book, but not here. And then the whole flag giant screen scene is kind of bizarre.
It is, but at least it was kind of neat when he looks at her. I mean, obtained some pleasure from that, but it still was a horrible scene. Because, okay, one of the things is Flag's vision is clouded in the book. He does not know necessarily who the spies are. And I don't even think he's positive she's a spy when she gets up there. Like, absolutely positive.
Right. But, he kind of knows who the spies are, except for Cullen. But he wants them to admit it to him so he knows he's right.
Exactly. Exactly. And in this, he totally knows everything. Judge is out there. You're here. I just can't see the third one.
Right. Now, the thing I didn't like about this scene was how, like you said, it's kind of cool and ominous when everybody still sees him talking, except for Dana. She sees the screen change where he starts staring directly at her.
Yeah.
That's cool and it's scary, but that's not the Flag I know from the book.
Yep.
He would never show his hand.
Exactly.
So he kind of lets Dana know that he has noticed her. While in the book, she doesn't find out until the moment they say, hey, you have to go up to see the man.
Yeah, and she could have escaped at that point.
Yeah, that is exactly right. So, yeah, those are the things I wrote about Vegas.
I'll tell you, one of the things I hated was when he pretends to be killed. Because one of the things, Dana is a threat. If she'd have stabbed Flag, she might have been able to kill him. That's why he changed the knife into a banana.
Right. Yeah, yeah, because that's the thing, is that Flag and Mother Abigail have powers, but they're still vulnerable. Yeah. So if this happened in the book, Flag would be dead. He would be dead.
Yeah. They're making him all powerful in this. Like, he knows everything. He can't be killed. And, you know, the only weakness so far is that he can't see Tom Cullen. And they're making that out, like, because Tom Cullen has a lower IQ, like, he can't see him.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. But let's explain it, because it wasn't really clear in the TV show. But in the book, it's generally understood that he can't read Tom's mind because Tom is different than everybody else, right? Because he's special needs.
That's how I saw it. He's
right. So he can't read Tom's mind for some reason, and all he sees is the moon whenever he thinks of the fourth spot. So he knows there's a spy out there, but all he sees is the moon. And the reason for that is because, as we see in the book, consistently Tom always says M-O-O-N spells moon, or M-O-O-N spells any word. You know, so anytime that someone says, hey, that's a dog over there, M-O-O-N spells the dog. And so that's always, like, the main focus in his mind. And so the dark man can only see the moon because of that statement. And here, well, it's not understood why he can't. I mean, I didn't get any reason why he couldn't figure out Tom was the spy, right? I mean, again, it's a TV series, so you don't get as much information, though, you know?
Yep, exactly.
So I'll give it the benefit of the doubt there. Here, they don't even reference the moon. I don't think. He doesn't say, I only see the moon. What does that mean?
Right, exactly.
All right. So what else do we want to discuss about that whole scene?
There is not much to discuss, I don't think, other than most of that part of the episode is just showing you the hedonism in Vegas, which is not in the book, and it totally changes the story to where I don't even see how this society can even menace Colorado.
Right, right. Yeah. I mean, when Lloyd is a pimp and not a vice president.
Yeah.
Or, you know, then, you know, yeah, it's just stupid.
Yep.
All right, so let's get into some of the other plot points in this one here. All right.
We have Abigail yelling at Nick.
Yeah, yeah, let's talk about that. Yeah, let me read the things I wrote about that. I wrote for the Boulder stuff. Larry doesn't know how to cut wood, and Franny has to tell him how. That was such a pandering to woman power. I was like, are you kidding me?
First off, by this point, he's learned how to cut wood.
Right. And it's not that hard to know. No one puts their hand, one hand at the top and one hand at the bottom when they're cutting wood.
Right.
You know, so for him to be that stupid, and then of course they have to have Franny tell him what he's doing wrong. It's like, okay, whatever.
And at this point in society, everyone's seen a movie where someone's been cutting wood, so you have a pretty good idea of how to cut wood.
Yeah, well, and when I rewatched it a second time, he's actually cutting the wood wrong. And I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe they actually had the guy do that because it's so stupid. Okay, then it says, Harold says to Nadine, no one would believe that I would be with a type of woman like you. Because in the book, she's pretty hot. Here, she's even more hot. She's like a supermodel. And yet, that's not true based off the book. In the book, Harold has already become a fairly important and well-respected citizen, even if the people that know him most think he's a little eccentric and there may be something wrong.
And they all know she moves in with him.
And they all know she moves in with him. Yeah, she actually moves into his house and they become a known couple for a good month, I think, if not longer.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and here they're hiding the relationship and Harold still thinks of himself as a loser. When at this point in the book, Harold thinks of himself as not a loser. And his downfall isn't his shyness or his wimpiness or any of the other stuff that he thought he was. It's his own vindictiveness and jealousy that brings him down.
Because he's earned respect in the community. He's well-liked. And he is smart. I think he overestimates himself in the book. But in here, he's just, he's a caricature again.
Yes.
But.
And then I go, then I have Nadine is the boss in their relationship when in the book, she was the person that, I guess, kept them on the right path, but she didn't really boss him around or whatnot because he had confidence already at this point in the book. He wasn't a wimp or a loser. Mother Abigail knows about the spy, so we already discussed that one. Mother Abigail knows how to read sign language. We already talked about that one. Larry is single. We already talked about that one. There was one line I liked in this whole Boulder thing when Amber Heard's character, Nadine, is talking to Mother Abigail about the piano, and she goes, "Music doesn't stop people from being people." And I thought that was pretty telling. That was a good line.
Yeah.
Because they're talking about how you can be, music can make you feel something or whatever. But then Nadine brings that up, which is, but unfortunately music doesn't stop people from being people. So.
Well, that whole was pretty interesting just from the fact that you get the sense that Abigail knows what she's up to, not exactly, but that she's somehow linked to Flag. And it's like this little bit of sparring without actually sparring out, you know, out in the open.
Yeah, there's a couple of scenes in the book where she, when she first meets Nadine, she doesn't feel anything from Nadine. She doesn't feel, in other words, she, you know, she can feel like people like, oh yeah, you came to me, whatever. But when she tries to read Nadine or bless Nadine, she knows Nadine's a little different, but she doesn't look at it as necessarily nefarious or, like you said, aspiring. It's more like an oddity.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, but here they make it more like a normal conversation, and they both know. Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the scene was really there for, to be honest, except to make it. It's almost like it was Nadine's choice. This was almost like the judge to Larry, but Mother Abigail's basically saying, you have a choice. You made the choice to keep Joe safe. You know, basically trying to have Nadine think, you know what, maybe I should go to Larry and get out of this mess that I'm in with Harold.
Yep, exactly. Yep.
Yeah. So that's the way the book, I mean, the miniseries does it. Rather than the book. In the book, I think she just decides on her own.
Yeah, she gets afraid, and so she goes to. She's worried about going to Flag, and she always has, but it kind of comes to a head. And but in the
and she
book,
doesn't want to be damned either. She feels she's going to be damned if she goes to.
In the book, it explains that she purposely waits until it's too late. She knows it's too late. Because he's with Lucy.
Oh, you're right, yeah.
Yeah, so it explains that basically she knows it's too late, but she's going to see what he'll do, and he does exactly what she kind of expects, so she's going to still go to to Flag.
Right, right. Yeah, so she it's basically like she knows it's not going to work, but I might as well give it the college try.
Yep.
Because again, she knows Larry probably better than anybody else that's in the community, because she's the one, she and Larry are the ones that travel together basically to get the boulder. And so she already knows that Larry is going to stay honorable to Lucy, but she's got to try because she knows she screwed up. She knows she should have stayed, been with Larry. And also she knows if Larry does accept her, she won't be damned to hell. And then when Larry says no, she gives up. And I even actually said that in our book episodes. I said, why didn't she just go with someone else? I mean, all she had to do if she,
right.
You know, maybe it had to be more than just having sex. It had to be love too, because in the book, she's still a virgin when she makes it to Flag. Even if she's had various other sex. Well, in this TV show, it's implied that Flag has told her to have sex with Harold, and she's actually had intercourse with Harold. Because in the dream sequence, she goes, you gave me to Harold. And he goes, no, I helped you, or something like that. It was a weird scene.
It was a weird scene.
Yeah. All right. So what do we want to talk about? We can talk about any scenes anywhere.
I think all that's left is really the Harold having dinner with them scene, which if they weren't uncomfortable with Harold before, they should be after that dinner.
Right, right. And it's not necessarily
all
because
he's need.
What's that?
That should be all the clue that they need, that he's insane.
Yeah, well, he was drunk, and that's what Stu said. He goes, I wouldn't look at it as, I see your point, and you should, what he says, he says to Fran, he goes, you should keep that worry that you have, because, you know, you're, you know, that's what you think, but we should also consider that it's a young kid that's in love that can't have the person he loves, and he was drunk, and basically he spilled the beans because he was drunk.
Well, I don't even think he really spilled the beans about her. It's just he was a dick. So he showed his hatred right there, like, just on display.
And I see your point. But honestly, if I was there and I happened to see it, I would have been, like, horrified, absolutely. But I think I would have felt a lot like Stu, which is, my God, this kid has been shit on and whatnot, and he's pissed. And, you know, in other words, once he got drunk, he basically was saying, you know, you treated me like shit when I was younger, Franny, you know.
But it's more than that, because he's so crafty that he makes her think that he was at that scene getting the ice cream or whatever. And then in the end, he's like, I wasn't there. I was never there.
Right. And that
story. So, I mean, it's not like he was so drunk he couldn't understand nuance. I mean, he was doing a pretty good job there of leading her on this little pathway to looking like an idiot.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I see everything you're saying, and everything you're saying is absolutely legit. But I wouldn't invite him over anymore. That's for sure.
Damn sure.
But I could see what happened. In other words, if I was there and I saw it, I would say, okay, this is a drunk guy who's pissed at this woman that he was hoping to date. And it's all coming out now because he's drunk. So that's how I looked at it. But you're obviously the one that would be right, because he's off to, you know, kill people.
Yeah.
As we know. Yeah, and he really, I don't know how drunk he was. I think a lot of it was fake drunk, because he was able to set up the cameras upstairs when he pretended he had to go use the bathroom.
Yeah, and it kind of bothered me that they've changed his character to be, again, knowing so much, like he set up all these cameras and all this stuff. I mean, it's just, I don't know.
You know what they should have done too? They should have made the house a ranch, because it was kind of bizarre. They would say, oh yeah, you go upstairs and use the bathroom up there where the bedrooms are. When anybody, since it was a duplex, or not duplex, but two story house, there's always a bathroom on the first floor.
Yeah.
No one would have had them go upstairs.
Right.
You know, and so that's what I was like, when I was watching, I go, they should have just made, if they're going to do this crap, they should have made it a one-story house where he could get away with it, obviously, without people like me saying, who the hell has their guests go upstairs to use the toilet?
Right. And couldn't she have gotten a second set of radios to work with Larry?
Yeah. Yeah, that whole thing's fake, right? That none of that was in the book. Oh. There's no, yeah.
Nope.
Yeah, that was kind of weird. Yeah, why didn't she get? They have hundreds of. I mean, if they're able to find, it's not. We'll put it this way: if it was that easy to find, tiny secret cameras at the local Best Buy, there's no reason why they couldn't have found another set of walkie-talkies at the local Best Buy.
Yep.
Yeah, so that's a good point. It didn't even occur to me.
I mean, they were causing themselves problems by having to rely on Stu's radio.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and Larry would never have done that in the book. I'm not breaking into that guy's house, absolutely not.
Right.
That's out of character for him in the book.
Yep.
And he wouldn't do it as a favor like that. Just for, you know, it would only be after a certain point where, okay, we know Harold is up to something. We have to find it. Franny makes sense. And that's why it's in the book. She's the one that breaks in.
Right.
She's the one that's been with him. She's the one that's noticed that. He kind of seems like he knows things that he shouldn't know, meaning he's been reading my own diary.
Right.
You know, and that's what happens in the book. So she becomes suspicious.
A little chocolate stain.
That's right. Yes, that's right.
At that point, he's still eating chocolate when he reads her diary. Because they're
that's
on
right.
the... He hasn't slimmed down yet.
That's right. That's right. Yeah. So, yeah, that was ridiculous, too, that they would actually have Larry's character break in. I would have never seen that happening.
Yeah.
Oh, and then it was weird, too. He goes, yeah, I've always thought he was a little weird, too, because Joe acted weird.
Yeah, and that was like, a 30-second scene, if that?
Right, right, yeah. And in the book, Joe wouldn't go in, but, you know, he kind of kicked it off as just Joe being a kid, you know?
Right.
And here, it's like, Joe didn't like it either. So, yeah, all right, I'll break in. I guess I'll do it. You know? Yeah, it was just really, really bad. And he had lights on, too. It was kind of weird.
Yeah.
I think that was the weird thing, right? Because they have Harold coming home, and they don't have him rushing necessarily to get into his house. But the moment he gets in the house, he assumes someone broke in. It was weird.
It was like he knew that's what Fran's whole plan was.
Yeah, and that didn't make sense. I would have liked it better if maybe he walks in and the door was unlatched or...
Something.
Or something was laying on the ground, like a note or something that he had, you know, a book or something, and it fell over. But he doesn't, and then he just goes all the way upstairs, looks around, and he sees the chess piece.
Yeah, and he knows that that one exact chess piece was moved just a tiny bit. Come on.
Yeah. Yeah, he wasn't OCD in the book. In here, they're making him like OCD. That's kind of weird.
I could see if he had put up like a piece of tape on the door, so if it had been opened, he noticed it. But
right,
not
right.
This one particular chess piece was slightly out of place, and it wasn't even that far out of place.
Right, right. Yeah, it was kind of a cliche. You know, someone knocks something. Whoops! I'll pick it up and put it back, and it's. You know, it's turned the wrong direction or something.
Yeah.
You know, we see that in hundreds of things. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think there's much more to discuss. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, I wanted to bring this up too, is that they have Fran now, you know, she's pregnant, and they've shown it now for 3 episodes, and in 2 episodes, she's been pregnant pretty much the whole time. And one of the big aspects in the book is she always talks about it, is I'm worried about if the baby will survive the plague. Because even though they're all immune to the plague's still out there.
Right.
So certain people that are born or whatever could still get the plague. And that is talked about a lot. While here, they haven't really talked about it at all. They just have her that she's pregnant from some guy before the apocalypse.
Right.
So I guess they're going to bring it up right when she has the kid. They're going to, you know, they're going to start talking about it. But in the book, they set it up pretty quick that she's worried about the pregnancy and the survival of the baby from the plague. So I assume they're just going to dump it on us. The episode where she gives birth.
Or in the coda.
Yeah. Yeah, that could be true too. Yeah. Yeah, right. Anything else you want to talk about?
No.
Yeah, I guess not. It's terrible.
It kind of sickens my stomach even discussing it.
Yeah. Yeah. It is a shame.
I mean, we have 3 episodes of the main story left. That's it.
Right, right. I mean, if you're...
And man.
If you're a heterosexual man and that interests you, you get to see Amber Heard in black panties and Julie Rowe and Dana and Teddy's.
Yep.
So that's good, I guess. And it is good, but that's about it.
Yeah. Maybe masturbating to Stu and Fran having sex.
Yeah. Yeah. That was unfortunate. Yeah. I have to say, and no disrespect for the actress, because I saw her in a film called The Giant. But the actress that plays Franny, she's an Australian actress, and her name's Odessa Young. She was really good in The Giant. Here, she's just terrible.
I don't think it's her. I think it's the writing and the direction.
I think you may be right. Yeah.
I mean, I think Harold's totally told to overact, and I don't think that's the actor's fault, but I think that they're asking him to do that.
That's true too. You're right, because he seems like a pretty good actor generally too. Yeah, so you're right. I think it's the script, not the. I mean, again, I've seen Odessa Young in another film, and she's really good. So I think you're right. I think the writing is just terrible, and the way they have Harold overreact. I mean, you remember how I said last week when he was pissed when he saw Fran and Stu kissing or holding hands or something, and he turns his face and he's making all these weird expressions of anger and hate.
Yeah. Yep.
And it's like over the top ridiculous. Well, they do it again here when he's basically, like you said, masturbating into the camera, and they start playing Don't Fear the Reaper, and he has this like insane grin, and it's like, oh, for crying out loud, this is overreacting.
Yeah, it goes to the back of the view of the chair, and the chair's moving. You're like, oh my God, come on.
It's so terrible. Yeah, yeah. All right, so let me give my worst part of this whole episode, and this episode is absolutely horrendous. I would say the worst part of this entire episode is the massive change of Vegas to hedonist versus totalitarian.
Yeah.
I think that was the most offensive thing of the entire episode, and there was a lot of bad stuff in this episode.
Yeah, it's egregious from the point of view of the message of the story. It totally gets wrong what's happening in the story.
Yeah, it also changes the entire section of the story. You know, the whole Vegas section is completely different because of it, and Flag and all those people. And I even said offline to you, I go, I wonder if the writers are trying to say that if you're a hedonist, you're evil or something.
It feels that way, doesn't it?
It does. Yeah. I mean, because it doesn't. There's no other explanation.
But they've ruined, like, even them as a nemesis. It's hard to even take them seriously.
Yeah.
What are they going to do? Roll in and just, you know, feed us cocaine and whatever?
Right, right. And Lloyd scream in heaven.
Yeah, exactly.
10 seconds. Oh my God, it's terrible. All right, so let's get my final thoughts on the episode, and then we'll do some wrap up stuff, and then your final thoughts.
Oh God, it gets worse talking it through. It's just not a good episode. I you could cut out this whole episode and I'd be okay with it, because it just does such a poor job of showing what Vegas is all about, and it makes them a joke. And it's almost hard to even take Flag seriously now, because if that's the society he's running, I mean, what are they going to get done? Woohoo! I'm not too worried about them. So, I don't know. It's terrible.
Yeah, very well. Yeah, for me, yeah, I consider this just a fifth time now, five episodes in a row, where the two showrunners have basically spit a loogie right in our faces. They don't understand this novel or the source material at all. They don't understand why people like the book. They don't understand the fans because there's a reason why the fans like the book, and they have absolutely destroyed completely what should have been a nice little adaptation of a really good series, or I should say book, because the miniseries from the 90s, they had, what, 4 episodes? And they did a really good job, generally. I mean, obviously, those special effects and things like that aren't going to be like they are today, but that was well done. That was written well, and it paid tribute to the book really good, where they did the changes, where they had to merge characters together, like Nadine and Rita, they merged together, you know, things like that. It was done because they have to do cuts and do merges and whatever because of time constraints and whatnot, and they did a really good job. Here, they just destroyed the whole thing. They, from the apocalypse to Vegas, it's just been horrible, and I would love to use profanities, but I'm not going to. All right, so next week will actually be the 6th episode, and that's the episode that was the last episode, I believe, the North American critics were able to see. Basically, before the season came out, as we discussed prior, critics were able to get a sneak peek before everybody else. North American critics were able to get 6 episodes. Asian critics, such as the Hindustan Times in India, were able to see 4. And for the North American who've seen all 6, those who said the show stinks said episode 6 stinks as well. So I'm not looking to think it's going to get any better. So the next episode is called The Vigil. Directed by someone named Chris Fisher, which who actually was the guy that directed this episode here. And it's also written by Jill Killington and Nate Lee, who were the writers of this episode here. So we're getting the same group as we got last week. I'm not sure if that's a good thing. I'm sure
it's a good thing.
yeah. I mean, they did a terrible job this week. Again, they're not the showrunners, so maybe they have to follow directions, but it was terrible. So we're going to have them next week as well. That's going to debut January 21st, 2021. For folks who are curious, we're recording this January 19th, 2021. We usually record 4 or 5 days after the episode due to prior commitments. So we'll be back next week. But we do want to once again thank the folks who have at least stuck with us. I know a lot of this has become a bitching session for us. But again, as we said in prior episodes, we honestly wanted to like this show, and we do love the source material. And unfortunately, that hasn't been the case here. But we do want to thank once again all the folks who have been listening, because we are getting a pretty big audience, which is good, because we are trying to do a quality topic, and we are actually being fair. I think we're being fair. Don't you think we're being fair?
I absolutely think we're being more than fair. I mean, I could criticize this show for hours, but we're keeping it as short as possible. I'd love to give just glowing reviews. That was what I was hoping for.
yeah. I thought we were going to be. I was worried that when we started this podcast that we were going to be like fanboys saying, oh, this is so good, it's so good, it's so good, you know, and we're going to just be like glowing over it like fanboys instead of being, you know, unbiased. But oddly, we become the opposite, and we hate the show. However, we are still unbiased. That's the thing, right?
Yeah. I mean,
that's the key. So, all right. So, hopefully, see folks again next week. Once again, email is darkdiscussions@aol.com, or go to darkdiscussions.com and press the contact us form. A form will pop up. you fill it in, and it is basically the same thing as sending an email. It comes to us as an email. So with all that stated, Barrett, why don't you lead us out?
Thanks for joining us for Don't Tell Me, I'll Tell You, The Stand podcast. Next week, we will be reviewing The Vigil. Please join us for that.